Hey, how you doing? Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available for Monday, the 28th of July, 2014, with me, Daniel Ruiz Tyson, coming to you live at 10 o'clock on Resonance 104.4 FM. Just the 9 attempts to get through the electric gates here tonight. I've long been convinced the heart attacks that took out my parents would claim me at the cafe. I might be wrong. It could well come outside the gates here, given how much time I spend there trying to get in. How are you, South London? Hope you're all well. We got here. It is the last in the series. And this week, I'm giving you my final Nectar Points update. I'm asking, what was the greatest toy you never had as a child? Time permitting, modern man with the old school circus strongman physique, Mickey Boyd, prepares to move on as he brings us his final Mickey Boyd lodger. And we visit the cafe for one last time, where I encounter the notorious urinating man of SW9, not to be confused with the still AWOL urinating dwarf of SW8. That is all on this week's Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available. Cut this show and it bleeds pay point. And it is going out to all 12 South London boroughs. We do not recognise Merton on this show. And do remember, this is live radio. It's not a podcast. It is happening now. The best way to be involved with the show is to listen to it live on a Monday night at 10 p.m. This is your last chance to interact. Don't be like me and the clubs of South London and the West End in the early 90s, just standing around on the edge of the dance floor because I couldn't dance. I observed away a chunk of my young adult life. Don't make the same mistake as me. Get involved. Find me on Twitter at 1607 West Egg. Between now and 10:30, I'll be taking your tweets, or alternatively, email the show, DRT, available at westegg1607.co.uk. So put your feet up for the next 28 minutes and a bit, and forget about rebooting your life until tomorrow. The dreams that died, forget them. The childhood sweetheart you lost, forget them too. You don't want them back 20 years later when someone else got their peak years anyway. It's too late to have kids, forget about that too. They'd never have respected you anyway once you'd moved them all into poorly insulated tiny studio accommodation carved out of what was once a four-bedroomed house. None of that matters. That barber's shop that does international money transfers, it's South London. They'll still be open at 10:30 tonight. Close your eyes. Imagine you have a window in your bathroom and enjoy a mold-breaking show that the media may only discover long after I've gone into the care home. So the scorching weather last week played havoc with my bouffant to the extent that I finally went and got it chopped off. I went from 1986 to 1993 in just 15 minutes. Pleased with it overall. I think a haircut at this age is the equivalent of having a facelift. And the thing about middle age is that you begin to experience fashion and hairstyle cycles all over again. I've said that before. Men's fashion over the last couple of years has been very early 90s, an era of clothes I remember specifically not liking. And hair-wise, so many of us guys now are sporting the safer, more classical hairstyles of the late 80s and the early 90s. To experience these a second time and to do so skint once more, that's how I know I'm running out of time. So to put the bouffant behind me, I went back to the cutting crews who made a couple of appearances on the show in the early episodes back in the spring. I got this Algerian barber last week, mullet, heavily gelled, wavy hair and big wide nostrils like a horse. You put 50 pairs of nostrils in the lineup, I'd pick his out without fail. Some of the most distinctive nostrils I've ever seen. The nostrils put me in mind of my hastily aborted 2005 nose, nose number 4, I think. The nose was quickly destroyed by a Cesar Menotti just before the smoking ban came in during the mid-noughties. This is the Portuguese woman in the cafe with the death grey skin pallor and Rod Stewart-like voice who smokes like a 1970s South American football coach. But you know what? It might have been a blessing in disguise. I wasn't suited to the wider nostrils. I'm a low-key guy. I didn't want nostrils that turned heads. And they were, you know, they were disproportionate to my face. My surgeon had played God with those nose number 4, hadn't cleared the nostrils with me, said they would help me breathe better. No one needed to breathe that much. I remember texting my then large-headed girlfriend on my way home to give her the heads up on the new nostrils after having the plaster removed. It was only a small flat. We both knew my too large for me nostrils meant we'd have to find a new bigger place. We can't live here, she said as soon as she saw the new nose. We ended up moving to a place that was so big we barely saw each other in there. We became strangers. The gulf between us grown as wide as my new nostrils, and eventually we went our separate ways. A couple of sightings this week of cafe personalities seen outside of their natural cafe environment. We've come to know these characters over the course of the series. It is good to see what they get up to away from the cafe. Think of this as like the extras you might get on a DVD. Tuesday, the 22nd of July, Future Me, I saw him at 1447 hours on South Lambeth Road, waiting at the northbound bus stop for a number two bus. The 88 arrived first. He let that go. I've seen Future Me in Victoria so many times over the last few years, and back in my pre-teetotal days, we were often in the same pub late at night, ignoring each other, so I'm certain he was probably waiting for that number two. Also on Tuesday, the 22nd of July, Chinfisher Man, one half of the Chinfisher couple whose mutual clefts I talked about extensively until April when I was visiting the cafe first thing in the mornings. I saw Mr. Fisher outside Little in Stockwell at 17:16 hours. I do hope he knows how to pack. They don't take any prisoners at a Little's checkout. This week's Nectar Points update. I ended last week still on only 233 points. It's more than 3 months now and 50 buses ago, I think, since I last broke through the magic 500 points barrier. This week, I tried to go out all guns blazing. I wanted to finish on an end of series Nectar Points high. There was nothing to lose, I figured. I spent £8.64. Amongst the items bought were a cranberry body wash for 95p. That was on offer. 250ml, very hard to get a special offer on the 300ml shower gels these days. Bought a half-price Dentil 2. Life, I've said before, I think it's about nailing small talk, knowing when and how to exit a conversation, making sure when you wake up in the mornings you can cope with the sight of who's lying next to you. And it's also about being patient and waiting for those dental offers, because they do come along and you have to be ready when they do, South London. Once a month, every 5 weeks perhaps, some store somewhere will have a dental offer on, and that is when you pounce. I also got the Actimel 0% Fat Original Flavoured Family Pack at £3. That was my marquee signing, if you like. There's been a price rise on the two packs of eight for £4 deal, so I felt I had no alternative but to go for the family pack. Right now, I don't think anyone's going to be buying the standard eight pack for £2.75 because it makes no financial sense. I just pretended I was buying the family pack for my imaginary family. There was a little voice in my head as I lifted it off the shelf, taunting me. This is what you might have been buying every week if 20 years ago you hadn't been watching every David Caruso episode of NYPD Blue half a dozen times instead of going out and meeting girls. Now look at you, you sad little man, your Oyster card's in deficit as you travel every week to a station to do a radio show few people have heard of, wearing your specially made orthopedic insoles and trainers no one's ever heard of, and your family name's headed into extinction. I can't tell you how good that first series of NYPD Blue with David Caruso was, South London. It remains the best piece of television I have ever seen. If it costs me being a dad, so be it. That £8.64 was worth 16 points, my best weekly score in a while, not a bad sign-off. I'd gone in there after a visit to Brixton Iceland's, the roughest of the stores I frequent. Bought some I Can't Believe It's Not Butter Light. So I had this Iceland bag on me. And while I bagged up my stuff at the Sainsbury's self-checkout in one of their carrier bags, when it asked me if I'd used any of my own bags, for the first time ever, I pressed yes and entered one for the Iceland's bag. I could, at a stretch, argue I was right to do that. After all, you know, my Sainsbury's bag was going inside the Iceland's bag, and it did. But ethically, I don't think I was right to get that bag reuse point. I just wanted to know what it was like to score a point for a bag reuse again. It had been so long. Don't judge me, people. That controversial point meant I left there on 250 points worth £1.25, halfway towards the magic 500 points barrier. And that's where points wise I leave you, South London. Where I will be points wise if we do this again, who knows?
Daniel Ruiz Tyson. He's so available.
The time now is 10 minutes past 10. You're listening to Daniel Ruiz-Tyson is available with me, Daniel Ruiz-Tyson, live on Resonance 104.4 FM, the voice of the windowless bathrooms, pockmarking South London. Remember, you can support Resonance by visiting resonancefm.com and making a donation. The station needs your support. You're not going to find a lot of these programmes elsewhere, so do please show your support for original programming. Some tweets coming through. Eamon, today I saw a dog stop and think twice about traversing a section of Hackney pavement because of the amount of dog mess on it. Yids is tweeting, I once got told off in Dog Kennel Hill, Sainsbury's, for abusing the reuse system. The security guard pointed out that I think there's another tweet due to come through. I have been to the Dog Kennel Hill, Sainsbury's myself. It is a big one. The second part of Yitz's tweet says, the security guard pointed out that I'd claimed the reuse of 9 bags when I'd only bought 4 items. I claimed ignorance. We do what we have to, South London, don't we? A couple of news items that caught my eye during the week. Interesting news on the lavatory hand washing front, which the cafe would do well to incorporate. The Safeguard Germ Alarm is a soap dispenser developed by a company called Procter & Gamble and is already used in some public WCs in the Philippines. Sensors monitor the doors of each stall. Once you leave the stalls, the alarm starts ringing and can only be stopped by a push of the soap dispensing button. I think if they install these in the cafe, I suspect the alarm would be ringing so frequently its batteries would need replacing every day. I think these germ alarms should be mandatory on every toilet. Until this is incorporated in every public toilet in the world, I don't think you could truly claim to know a person. The second news item that caught my attention, Secret Cinema, which is a cult phenomenon amongst cinema fans, organising ambitious mixed media screenings of films, always looking to surprise its audiences. You know, it's only 12 minutes past 10 already. I've got the feeling I'm going to have to bump Mickey Boyd. I don't think he's going to be happy about that. Secret Cinema, yeah, it's mixed media screenings of films, always looking to surprise its audiences. You might have read how its Back to the Future screenings this week ran into problems. But what got my attention was reading how a few years back when the Secret Cinema showed Shawshank Redemption, an overrated film in my humble opinion, and staff asked the audience for their clothes and the new arrivals were given prison jumpsuits to wear during the screenings. Now, my question, having read that, is were these jumpsuits washed between screenings? I'm doubtful. You're coming up with a business plan and you're running it by your business partners, costing it all up. When it comes to factoring in the laundrette cost for washing the jumpsuits after each showing, some money man's going to veto that straight away. Those laundrette costs are too much. It's meant to be a prison jumpsuit. You think the jumpsuits in prison smell fresh all the time, they might say. We can't not wash these, one of the business partners might counter. Look, my friend, the mercenary might start his response with, we have to make some money. There are great projects out there, like this little known Monday night radio show, that don't make a penny. We don't want to go down that route. We are businessmen, not artists walking around in H&M or Tomnal 2010 range clothing. Moving on now ahead of the show, I asked on Twitter, what was the greatest toy you never got? Something you wanted so bad that you saw all your friends with, but it never came your way and you've still never quite got over it. Mine would have had to be the Evel Knievel doll. These go for an absolute bomb now on eBay. My childhood friend Nellie Jenkins had one and I loved everything about it. The outfit, the white jumpsuit with Confederate stars on blue stripes, the stunt cycle which would be launched from the gyro-powered Energizer station which you'd wind up furiously to release the bike. There were so many different variations and sets made of the Evel Knievel toy line. I think they were made by Ideal between 73 and 80. I think my friend Nelly had the Strato cycle, which was released in 77 to tie in with Evel Knievel's film Viva Knievel. The Strato cycle was the bike Evel Knievel rode in the film. Researching this, I learned Ideal cancelled their contract with Evel Knievel in 77, feeling that his attack with a baseball bat on Sheldon Saltman, the promoter for the Snake River Canyon jump, while Knievel still had both arms in casts following his latest accident, was not the image to be portrayed for children. Crimson Avenger also rude, never having an Evel Knievel tweet, and the Evel Knievel stunt cycle, wind it up and hope it stays upright, try and scare the cat, jump over three action men. BevH59 tweeted, a pogo stick and Totopoly, a horse racing equivalent of Monopoly. Sandra down the road had both, have never forgiven my parents. My cousins had Totopoly. It's a double-sided board with each side representing a different half of the game. Always struck me as a little complex. Having read up on it over the weekend, am none the wiser. Each player has a set of horses. The horses, you move them around a loop. Depending on which square they land on, the player can collect advantage and disadvantage cards, which become important in the game's second phase. Cybermental tweeted, Stretch Armstrong. I do recall Stretch Armstrong from my early years. When I saw it, Cybermental continued, I wanted it. I never got it. I saw other kids playing with it after Christmas. Worse than the $6 million man action figure, it was crap. Maybe a touch harsh on the $6 million man doll, which I have fond memories of, and indirectly led to my obsession with the facial hair when I started sticking plasticine on its top lip to mimic the tash Lee Majors grew in the final series of the show. But I would accept the $6 million man doll had problems, mainly that it was so much bigger than any of the other dolls around, even Action Men. It was very limited in terms of how it could interact with other dolls. Very similar to when I first met Mickey Boyd in 83, and he looked so much bigger and older than the rest of the class. Stretch Armstrong, meantime, he was an action figure in the shape of a short, well-muscled blonde man wearing a pair of trunks. The doll's most notable feature was that it could be stretched from its original size about 15 inches to 4 or 5 feet. If a tear did develop, it could be fixed with an adhesive bandage. It was in production from 76 until 80. Always wanted a Millennium Falcon Star Wars toy, never got one, tweeted Cassius the Elf. I had maybe 95% of the Star Wars action dolls myself. I had none of the big ships, unfortunately. A small AT-AT walker, I think, was the biggest accessory I got. We just didn't have the room in our bedsit for me to be getting anything bigger. Chrissy Plummer, the only listener courageous enough to take on Nectar Points beast Paul S. Davis in the £10 Nectar Challenge, says the toy she always wanted was the early to mid 80s yellow Barbie camper van, because then all my Barbies could go away together, she says. I only had a two-seater silver Barbie Corvette and they could never go on holiday because I had to leave some behind. My friend had the camper van. I played with it. It was amazing. Bits folded out, but it was very expensive. Chrissy also submitted a second great toy she never had, Magic Sand. This was sand that changed colour in warm water. Once you took it out of the water, the sand would be dry. Don't ask me. I don't understand it either. My mum wouldn't allow me to have it, says Chrissy. It was too messy. You put it in the water and could make little underwater castles. Calibri 11 fan and longtime friend of the show, Nick Bryan, emailed, Hi, Daniel. One last email since it's the series finale. Like every kid in the UK during a certain point in the mid-90s, I had no Tracy Island, not even the one on Blue Peter made out of toilet rolls, which surely only serves to emphasise what you haven't got. You may not have the real toy, but never mind. Here's one that dissolves under mild rain. Shame. And thanks for another good series. Look forward to whatever the next project is. Nick. Thank you, Nick. The final group of great toys you never got were ones I'd never heard of myself. Wendy Catfink 1664 tweeted, Stop, Boris. After some Googling, I found the following review. This was a game that consisted of a huge battery-operated plastic spider on wheels with vicious-looking teeth, a pulsing green brain and stomach that glowed eerily, which progressed stealthily along a PVC web and could only be repelled when the beam from the rather slick-looking infrared ray gun hit it squarely in a small target located directly between its eyes. Crutchley tweeted, I never got a Tomy Big Loader or Big Big Loader construction set. Still upset about it. Might get one on eBay. Expanding on it, Crutchley continued, they were little tracks that cleverly organised little vehicles to pointlessly deliver plastic balls to different stations. Mostly Grumpy tweeted, Big track, no question. Anyone over 40 will know. This was a programmable electric vehicle created by Milton Bradley in the late 70s, resembled a futuristic sci-fi tank utility vehicle, possibly for use on the moon. The original Big Track was a six-wheel, two-wheel drive tank with a front-mounted blue photon beam headlamp and a keypad on top. Crutchley and Mostly Grumpy have been kind enough to post YouTube links on my Twitter, which I'll try and put up on the blog this week. Thanks to everyone who contributed to this feature.
Would you not recognise the borough of Merton?
We most certainly do not. We're quite right not to. And I say it every week, we shouldn't feel bad about it. 20 past 10 now, rapidly getting to the end of the series. You're listening to Daniel Ruiz-Tyson, is available on Resonance 104.4 FM with me, Daniel Ruiz-Tyson, one of just 201 non-tattooed men left in South London now. We've lost 9 non-inked brothers in the last fortnight. 2 more this week, leaving us hovering on 201. By the way, remember the podcast is out from the early hours of Tuesday morning. Meantime, tonight's show will appear on Resonance's SoundCloud page right after this and also gets another airing on Resonance on Friday at 5 p.m. Mickey Boyd's lodging situation. I'll see if I've got time to come back to it at the end of the show. For now, let's pop into the cafe, the South Lambeth Road Portuguese cafe that has effectively been my home for the last 13 years and serves, in my opinion, the best coffee in London. At the weekend, I was reading about the popularity of e-cigarettes and vaporizer cafes, how their popularity is soaring. But let me tell you something, the cigarette remains king in South Lambeth. I have little doubt that the last cigarette on this planet is likely to be smoked on the streets of SW8. I spent the last week dragging out the time spent on each of my lattes, much like Game of Thrones has dragged the White Walker's plot for the last 4 years. Normally, I'm done with a latte in 43 minutes. Lately, I've stretched that to an average 61 minutes. A disturbing development for me this week. My aunt's neighbour, the urinating man of SW9, a Spaniard, I'm sad to say, has shown up in the cafe. He's not to be confused with the still AWOL urinating dwarf of SW8, the African guy with the leather trench coat reminiscent of the one Spandau Ballet's Tony Hadley mistakenly wore on what was a scorching hot day at Live Aid, whose trails of urine in SW8, much like Mickey Boyd in the bathroom at his soon-to-be former lodgings, a reference you won't get because I've just had to bump the feature, were a scar on South Lambeth Road. This is the situation with the SW9, man. This is a growing problem for me. I've seen SW9 at the cafe once or twice now, but it's tended to be on a Saturday morning with his bouffanted wife whose hair reaches for the skies like a modern-day Tower of Babel. So with the cafe being invariably packed on a Saturday morning and me not always getting my toilet table on a Saturday, I've avoided being seen by him. But now, weekdays when I am always sat at my table and this man has his weak bladder, there is no avoiding him. SW9, let me describe him to you. He's very short, has a sparrow-like chest, built like the old German international footballer Thomas Hessler. For years, I've been avoiding him on the streets owing to his habit of urinating in and around Stockwell, despite being just minutes from his home. He has, my aunt claims, a condition, which means he constantly has to go. But if you're telling me that of the thousands of street leaks this man has taken in SW9 over the last 4 decades, if you're telling me that all of those have been essential, I would not believe you. I would struggle to believe you. Because of knowing what he does, I'm desperate to avoid giving him my hand. I've had too many handshakes on the street with this guy. No hand gel is going to be sufficient to clean any hand after such a shake. SW9 has seen me turn off onto a different street, regardless of whether I know he's seen me or not. As much as a small talk pains me, it's not something I've done to anybody else. Because, you know, if you're seen, you're seen. There's nothing you can do about it. Say hello, suffer the small talk, work out your exit strategy and go. But not with this guy. I'm just not giving him my clean hand. Having spotted me on Wednesday, I think it was, he emerged from the loo without, of course, washing his hands. He came through those swing doors. He was in the cafe for a while. He was in the loos for a while. Placed a strong, firm right hand on my left shoulder when he emerged. The hand remained there on my shoulder for a full 2 minutes as we small talked. You know, this is why the world needs that safeguard germ alarm. Thankfully, the warm weather meant he sat outside, so the interruptions and small talk were going to be sporadic. So my plan was I wouldn't goodbye him if I left before him, because that would necessitate another handshake. But I knew enough about the urinating man of SW9 to know he definitely had another trip to the loo in him. If I stayed in the cafe, it was likely we'd have another awkward exchange. Sure enough, he came in for his second leak, this time touching my left shoulder with both hands. He just stood there, post-WC, leaning on me like I was some bar in a pub as he chatted away. It was difficult for me. If I knew him well enough, I'd make light of the fact that was his second leak in the last 26 minutes. I would imagine as he was sat outside, he was as teased off that I was in the cafe as I was that he was. He may well have been playing over in his mind what I might be thinking if I saw him taking that second leak inside half an hour. And he would have been quite right. I think if I hadn't been there, he'd have been in sooner. This guy, I mean, he's got the most prolific bladder south of the river. Three loo visits in half an hour is easily within his capabilities. He exited his hands completely dry. At no point did I offer my hand. I don't know that I can wear the shirt ever again. By the way, if anyone does know what became of the urinating dwarf of SW8, do get in touch. Email me directly. Don't email the station. I think with the title urinating dwarf of SW8, that's hardly going to impress the bosses if you're sticking that in the subject header. One future me alert this week for new listeners who missed the first 22 episodes of this Below the Radar series. Future me is the old man I fear becoming, always alone, just 35 years older, and it strikes me that we appear to be at different ends of the same life. This morning, Monday the 28th of July, future me arrived at 11:24 hours. Looked unwell, I have to say. The tremor in his left arm I've noticed over the last couple of weeks seemed more pronounced. Coughing too. I'm thinking back to the hospital letter I saw him with a few weeks ago and beginning to wonder if all is well with my future self. He got his Guardian sports supplement from Sunday correspondent who was sat outside in his Johan Cruyff two-stripe wide-bottom tracksuit bottoms. You might recall in recent weeks, Sunday correspondent had been withholding the supplement. Future me sat at his usual central table opposite me. He enjoyed a brief exchange with Southpaw, who I now believe to be Italian, owing to a recent exchange I witnessed between him and an old woman from Foggia. Future me ordered a coffee and toast, exited at 11:46 hours after a prolonged spell of nose picking, hoping future me will still be okay health-wise if we do this again. I think I've missed seeing him, and that is it from the cafe, standing strong in the face of the crazy land grab taking place in SW8 as all the big coffee and supermarkets and burger chains move in to kill the uniqueness of the area, a place that occupies a special place in my heart. Let's just see if we've got time for an overheard then broadcasted on Little Heard Radio Show, carrying these over from last week's show, which I wasn't able to include. Oh, into time. This one was emailed in from David White at Calibri 11. If we'll were to continue last week's theme of naming listeners' fonts of choice. Overheard writes David, Peckham Rise Station, Thursday 17th of July 2014 at 08:13 hours. Sir, please remove your case from the barriers. I can't. It's solid state technology. Thank you, David. Another one held over from last week. This one is from two Thursdays back, actually. Overheard by Carlos, a Madonna 12. Don't get too many of those. 2:31 p.m. I like the timekeeping accuracy there, Carlos. Railton Road, a guy's on the phone. He says, the only things I buy are things that I need. I never buy the things I want. Yes, I can relate to that. And that is it. That is the series. 23 shows, 18 with an orthodontal brace, in which approximately 93,600 words were at serious risk of being mispronounced. Three haircuts, an average 8 attempts every week to get through the temperamental door entry gates here at the station. That's 184 attempts on the key entry pad. 92 buses in total, 4 buses every Monday, 432 pre-show blasts of my nasal inhaler, 7 donations and 2 absolute butcherings of a German DJ's name. And now we're done. Thank you all for listening. Maybe we'll do this again sometime. You'll have your bathroom with a window, gotten used to seeing your face in natural daylight. And even if you don't have that window, so long as you've got your health and you're not working for anyone younger than you, because you can't be working for anybody that you can remember what you were doing the day they were born. I don't think you can ask for any more than that. Please support the show. Get on the blog, 1607westegg.wordpress.com. Click on the PayPal link. You've got 23 original shows on there since February. No one else is making anything like this. Bits and pieces cropping up on the blog over the rest of the summer. Twitter, 1607westegg. The gravy coming up after this. I think we were good for each other, South London. Doing the show's been brilliant. I want to thank the boss, Ed Baxter, Sarah Nicol too, for all the help. All the engineers who worked on the show. Thanks especially to engineer number one, the brilliant Chris Dixon, who's done the bulk of the shows. Playing us out now, the brilliant keyboard choir with Skylab. Shoulders back, keep on walking towards the sun. I'm Daniel Ruiz-Tyson. For the last 23 weeks, I have been available.